Traffic on Sundays should be illegal. Lol.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_beeble. I'm also hosting Locked On NBA on Mondays and just recorded a great episode of that, so go check out Locked On NBA as well. What we're going to do in today's show, we're going to recap the action from Sunday. We're going to preview a small four-game slate for Monday. We're going to look at the week ahead and how you can juggle your lineup in weekly changes leagues and daily changes leagues. And we're going to shine that player spotlight on Jonathan Isaac of the Orlando Magic. So, Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Yep. We will start by looking at the week ahead, week 22 in the NBA. And it's a day, it's a week where we've got a more definite sort of days where we can really attack the streaming for daily changes leagues. It's a little bit of a topsy-turvy week as well in terms of when the games are played. On Monday, we've only got the four games on and a massive 11-game Tuesday. That's not the way it normally runs in the NBA. Normally, Tuesday is a fairly low-volume day. Also, Wednesdays are normally a low-volume day, and we've only got four games this week on Wednesday. 9 games Thursday, 6 games Friday, 11 on Saturday and 4 on Sunday. So the games that we're really going to be targeting for streaming are sticking out like dog's balls. Monday with 4, Wednesday with 4, Friday with 6, and Sunday with 4. They're your real 4 target days. On Thursday, you may be able to fit someone into your roster with only 9 games on. Some of you will, some of you won't. But Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, you'll have absolutely no problem in getting guys off the waiver wire. Most head-to-head leagues, playoffs should have started. They should have started a while ago. I know majority are starting this week. If your league still hasn't started the playoffs heading into this week, then, man, you are really doing it wrong. You really need to get stuff started much earlier than this. But it's, you know, streaming is as important as it's ever been at this time of the year. And you'll ask me questions all the time on Twitter. Who do I add? This guy or this guy? You know, overall value. It means nothing. And that stuff means nothing at this point of the year. Get your increasing games. Look at the stats that you need. Again, most matchups, you'll have 3 strong categories, your opponent might have 3, and there's going to be 2 or 3 up for grabs. Target those. Work out what stats you need and where those players will fit in onto your roster. Someone with a 4-game week who can only play 1 game is pointless. Someone with a 3-game week that you can play 3 games is much better than someone with a 4-game week who only plays 1 day. So it's really important that you have a look at this when you are taking it into the context of your own team. So make sure you are checking that out as well. If you want to talk daily changes leagues and which teams play on those low volume days, yeah, that's important. But I want to look at maximizing your acquisitions as we do in this portion of the show. So looking at back-to-backs and pseudo back-to-backs. With this week, there's no back-to-backs with 2 low volume days in a row. So we're looking at, you know, adding someone for the Monday, Wednesday, adding someone for the Wednesday, Friday, adding someone for the Friday, Sunday to get you extra games without using your weekly acquisitions. The Monday-Wednesday combo, there's only 2 teams that have that. It's the Miami Heat and the Milwaukee Bucks. Someone on the Bucks, maybe like the Muppet John Henson, is an interesting player you could take a look at. Tone Snell, you'd have to be pretty bloody deep because he just does almost literally nothing in those minutes that he plays. A guy like Jabari Parker, if he was dropped, this is an opportunity to use him for those 2 games. But on Miami, there's so many options. Jim Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, Tyler Johnson, Justice Winslow, throw Bam Adebayo in there if Whiteside's going to miss more time with his hip. There are so many guys who you can really take advantage of with the Heat on that Monday, Wednesday opening or to get, you know, those 2 games for the price of 1. The Wednesday, Friday combo, there's 6 teams that play that Wednesday, Friday slate. The Kings, the Warriors, the Heat again, the Celtics, the Lakers, and the Magic. So talking about these Heat players, they've got a really, really good schedule. You can add someone today from the Heat. You can play them Monday, you can play them Wednesday, you can play them Friday. You're getting 3 games for the price of 1 acquisition. So they are really key. The Kings guys, we know the players we're talking about here. Maybe it's Justin Jackson, Budrick Hield, Bogdan Bogdanovic. So even though Bogdan might have been struggling a little bit, the fact that you can get, you know, 2 games worth of value out of him off the wire, can be really useful. The Warriors, they're a little bit more up in the air. Maybe it's Uncle P, depending on the injuries, Nick Young. Maybe Omri Caspi. Maybe David West coming back can help with some defensive numbers. On the Celtics, tons of injuries as well, with Kyrie unlikely to play this week. Jaylen Brown already out. Daniel Tice, Marcus Smart, Al Horford all banged up. So Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart, yeah, Bainsey, Marcus Morris. These guys are going to have value. And midweek pickups of these guys, although you know, players like Smart and Rosie, you probably want to add already. But if you add a Celtics guy for Wednesday, you can play them Wednesday, Friday, Sunday on three low volume days. Lakers and the Magic, the other team, the Magic or already without Evan Fournier, Aaron Gordon still dealing with either a concussion or a migraine. We don't know which one. There's conflicting reports there, but that opens up minutes for Hezonja, Johnny Simmons, John Isaac as well. Some value there. On that Friday-Sunday pseudo back-to-back to end the week, we're looking at the Raptors, the Thunder, the Clippers, and the Celtics. On the Clippers, you could be looking at a guy like Sindarius Thornwell, who started the last two games. That may not continue, though. Miloš Teodosic could be an option for you there. The table, Montrezl Harrell. The Raptors, you've got plenty of options. Jakob Poeltl, CJ Miles, Freddie VanVleet, DeLon Wright's back in action. And the Thunder, I guess it depends on Steven Adams' ankle and what that's like by the end of the week. But Pat Patterson, Jeremy Grant, maybe even Dakari Johnson, which would be a really sort of deeper league situation. But these are guys that could have some value based on the way the schedule is playing out. For weekly changes leagues, what we're looking at... Actually, let's go through a little bit more for daily changes ones. When I talk about, like, the Spurs play four games this week and they've got a really nice schedule. You know, Houston, the Magic, the Pelicans, the Timberwolves, one of the better schedules of the week. But the problem is only one of their games comes on a low volume day, and that's Monday. They play Tuesday, they play Thursday, they play Saturday. So you could add someone from the Spurs, Rudy Gay, Pat Mills, Dan Green, but you might get one game out of them. And is that really worthwhile? Whereas someone from the Thunder, someone from the Kings, someone from the Heat, all those guys play four games, but you can utilize them at least three times. Someone on Boston who plays three games this week, every one of their games is an opportunity to use those players. Whereas on the other side, players from Phoenix, from Detroit, from the Bulls, they have three games this week, but not a single one of those games occurs on one of those low volume days. The same with the Pacers, the Nuggets, the Cavs, the Hawks, the Knicks, the Hornets, the Jazz. So there's so many of these guys, you know, deeper league. Do I add Malik Monk? Because he's the backup point guard now in Charlotte. But will I actually play him any of these days? And that could be a real waste of an addition if you make that move and you don't actually get to use that player. So that is really important. For weekly changes leagues, there's going to be plenty of decisions you need to make this week because nearly the entirety of the NBA is playing three games this week. We've got eight teams that play four games, and the other 22 play three games. So all your decisions are pretty much going to have to be based on opposition and schedule strength for those teams in that three-game band. Of course, you can check out the relative strength of schedules for these teams over on Basketball Monster on our schedule analyzer. But a rough overview, teams like the Warriors, the Heat, and the Sixers, they have really, really positive schedules. Whereas on the flip side, the Suns, the Pistons, the Magic, the Bulls, they have tough matchups, mainly because those two, especially Detroit and Phoenix, take on Utah, which really does downgrade your ability to put up fantasy numbers. But you can have a look at how much the schedule can actually impact, whereas you know, the Warriors have the Lakers, Kings, Suns. The Suns take on the Cavs, the Jazz, and the Warriors. So, you know, tougher matchups there can make the difference between a guy like, talk deeper league stuff, you know, Shaq Harrison on the Suns, or perhaps you're looking at Andre Iguodala or Shawnee Livingston on the Warriors. Yeah, that decision, even though you know, you might say, oh, I really need Harrison Steals, like, is it going to be something that happens based on that difference in schedule strength, which can have obviously a pretty big impact, but nearly all your decisions are going to be based on teams that play that three-game band. Most players that play four games, within reason, will be in your lineups, and make sure you are paying attention to that. And again, for daily changes leagues, you really want to pay attention to when those games are played. That's always a key portion of it. What we're going to do now, we're going to recap the games or the teams that don't play Sunday and don't play Monday, who otherwise wouldn't be a normal part of this podcast, to talk about what they did across the weekend. Then we're going to recap all of Sunday's action and do a preview of Monday later on in the show. So stay tuned for that. All right, let's have a look at these games across the weekend. One of those teams who isn't playing on Sunday or Monday is the Detroit Pistons. They played a game across the weekend, and Blake Griffin looks like his mini slump has resurrected itself. So that's not resurrected itself; it's gone away. So he's looking pretty strong at the moment. Or Reggie Bullock continues to just—I cannot believe how well this guy has shot this season. He's more of a point and three guys with very little else. The high efficiency helps, and if he has a shit night shooting, then he's not providing too much. But his shit nights, they're very few and far between, weirdly enough, this year. Luki Kennard went back to the bench with Jim Ennis starting over him, but still both the guys played a lot of minutes with Stanley Johnson out. Johnson, Ennis, Kennard, none of those guys are really 12-team league players, especially with the Pistons having a terrible schedule this week, but you can look at them as 16-teamers, maybe 14-team league players. Let's have a look now at the Washington Wizards, who had a big win over the Pelicans. When we look at how this all sort of plays out, the minutes were reduced in this one. Beal played, actually they had two games. They got smashed by the Heat and they beat the Pelicans the other one. It's really hard to get a full gauge because the minutes are so low. Otto Porter returned. He played 26 minutes in average across those two games just because of the return from injury and then the blowout nature. There's very little to mention with this team. We're still, of course, waiting for John Wall to come back. So get a lot of questions. Do I drop Thomas Satoransky because Wall's coming back? Well, if you're in the playoffs, Wall won't be back this week. So, making moves for 2-3 weeks in advance when you've got to win this week, it's a tough one to make that decision on. Satoransky is solid still. He's still playing 30 minutes a night. If you need assists and steals, he's going to provide that with pretty decent efficiency. So it all depends on the relative strength of your opponent and how your team looks. But he's not like an auto drop because it's 3 weeks before Wall comes back. You really do have to almost take it, to use a sports cliche, 1 week at a time. The Charlotte Hornets, as I mentioned, Michael Carter-Williams is out for the season, so Malik Monk will be the backup point guard as we move forward. He wasn't that great across the weekend. Had a strong game before that, but not a sensational performance from him in the last game. Marvin Williams also found himself injured, and that gave Michael Kidd-Gilchrist some extra minutes. Very, very little changing with this Hornets team, though, so not a lot to really take out of the performances we saw there. The Orlando Magic, as I said, no Fournier, no Gordon. So John Simmons is feasting. He averaged 24.5 points across the two games on the weekend. He's just racking up stats through high usage, and his efficiency is through the roof. We know that won't stick, 57% shooting across those two games, but the opportunity, the minutes will be there. If you need defensive numbers, John Isaac, who we're going to talk about later, is providing numbers, while DJ Augustine is solid, and Mario Hezonja is a decently strong option, although he hasn't been that great in those last two games without Aaron Gordon. Well, definitely not as good as you would have hoped him or he would be. The Suns, I don't even know what you can judge from the Suns. There was no Devin Booker. There was Davon Reed put up 16 points. Dragan Bender scored. Tyler Ulis was resurrected. Shaq Harrison played and played well. Very hard to get a full grasp on what this team is doing. If you need steals, though, Shaq Harrison is a guy that almost is not guaranteed, but he's going to get you almost a steal a game, get you 2 steals some nights, 3 steals other nights. He can do some things. He scored 14 points in 21 minutes on the weekend. So he's an interesting name to look at. Well, Alex Len can be dropped in pretty much all 12 and definitely all 12 and probably 14 and even getting to 16 team leagues. For the Clippers, Sindarius Thornwell made 2 starts, big minutes in one, lower minutes in the other. I do think that Thornwell's an interesting player, a decent high field goal percentage steals guard, which can be useful, but if he doesn't play enough minutes, then he is going to be a tough guy to use. He's not really a 12-teamer, more a 16-teamer. You need some assists, maybe you take a flyer on Milos Teodosic. We know that Danilo Gallinari is not going to be back this week, and Doc did say he's going to change the starting lineup up. So Lou Williams, who started across the weekend, maybe he goes back to the bench. Lots of things up in the air with how this Clippers team, despite winning both their games, how they are going to look. Rivers, Toby Harris, of course, they need to be owned. And Montrezl Harrell, if you need defensive stats, high efficiency, and some rebounding, he's going to be a guy that provides that. When I say efficiency, I mean field goal percentage. He's not normally a high free throw guy, although he did shoot 82% across the games on the weekend. Let's get into the action from Sunday's games now, and we'll talk monstrous line of the night. And of course, it's Anthony Davis, who returned from a one-game absence with an ankle injury. He had 25 and 11 with 3 assists, a triple, 3 steals and 10 blocks. Yes, he had his first NBA triple-double. He was 9 of 22 from the field and 6 of 6 from the free throw line. He continues his assault to be the best fantasy player over the month of February and March, just killing it. I don't know how many monstrouses he's got in the last 4 weeks. It has to be a ton. I don't even know what more I can say about him apart from the fact that he is averaging over his last 6 games over 4 blocks per game, which is just an incredible amount, and doing that with over 30 points a game, over 12 rebounds a game, over 2 steals a game, and 51 and 90% as his 2 percentages. Ludicrous numbers from Tone Davis, and he did it again, missed the one game. He just heals so quick. You see, oh shit, Anthony Davis to the locker room. Sprained his ankle, missed one game, came back, and had 10 blocks in a game. Just, it's crazy stuff that this continues to happen with Davis. His numbers are out of control at the moment, and you're in pretty good spot if you've got him through this playoff run. The waiver wire line of the night. This is one that's just not going to have any impact on any leagues, and it's Zaza Pachulia, 16, 11, and 3, a steal and 2 blocks, 7 of 9 from the field, and 2 of 3 from the free throw line. He's the 229th player over the course of the season. He's not a guarantee to even be in the rotation every night. When David West and Jordan Bell come back, then there'll be some nights that Zaza may not play at all. He's not going to be as good as he was in this game. The previous game, he had 0 points in 6 minutes with just 1 rebound. So, yeah, fair to say that that game against the Timberwolves that he had today was by far the anomaly. It had been 5 games prior to this that he hadn't had a block in, and he got 2 in this game. So really, chalk it up to it's great. Zaza did that, but it literally has no impact on what happens with him for fantasy as we move forward. The young gun of the night is the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince. He had 38 points with 7 triples, 6 rebounds, 7 assists and a steal, 11 of 18 from the field and 9 of 10 from the free throw line. That is an absolutely cracker of a performance. This is a bloke who started out okay this season, and I defended him quite a bit, but people, oh man, I got to drop him. And during that stage when people were saying that, he was a top 100 guy, but then he just fell right off. His minutes were down. Everything fell apart. And I said, look, you know what? I'm not a massive fan of his on-court game. And you know, in some cases, you'll be able to move on from him. But he has responded with a top 30 performance over the last 2 weeks, averaging 18, 4.5, and 3 with 1.6 steals, hitting 4 threes a game, and shooting the ball better at 44 and 86% from the line. So the 50% shooting from 3 is obviously something that won't stick. But his usage is well up. The efficiency is nice. He's handling the ball more. He's doing the defensive stuff, which can provide value, and he does need to be owned. But in saying all this, the previous game, he had 3 points in 18 minutes, and the game before that, he had 9 points in 29 minutes. So there's going to be some ups and downs. The game before that one, he had 22 and 5 with 6 triples. So you're getting big, big boom performances, and then these real stinkers thrown in the middle. But with what Prince is doing with his opportunity out there, he shot 50% or better in 3 of the previous 4 games. Before that, he'd gone under 50% for 9 consecutive games. So again, there is some flukiness with the shooting performances at the moment, but the opportunity is there. He is playing well, and he does need to be owned. So Taurean Prince is your young gun of the night. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. The pencil, Harrison Barnes, 14, 5, and 3 with 2 triples, but it was the shooting that really killed you. 4 of 16 from the field and a putrid 4 of 8 from the free throw line. He is the 94th ranked player this year, which is a downgrade on where he was last season. He was 81st this year, and he was getting drafted in the 60s this season, which you would have heard me say plenty of times. That was just incredibly high. I could not get behind that at all. But he has been piss poor over the last 2 months, outside the top 120. Yeah, the 18 points he's averaging is really, really nice. But he is literally giving you no other, actually not literally, because he is giving you a marginal positive in rebounds, marginal, and a slight positive in free throw percentage. But over those last 2 months, 18 points, 1.5 threes, 6 boards, 1.5 assists, 0.8 steals, 0.2 blocks, 42 from the field, and 82 from the line. It's just very, very pedestrian stuff. It's great in a 14-team roto league. It's probably fine in a 14-team head-to-head league, but in a 12-team league, in a roto league, I'm sure he's going to be sitting on your bench with the way that he's playing. And they are cutting his minutes down by 2 or 3 per game. If you want to move on from him in a 10-team league, if you want to move on from Harrison Barnes, as dumb as this might sound, you might have to. Now, the points are the hard part to come by. are getting 18 to 19 points. You can't just find them on the waiver wire. So that should weigh pretty heavily on your decision. But if you're in a punt point situation, or you're that far ahead of points in a roto league, or that far behind in a points in a roto league, then what else is he really giving you? He's just providing average numbers in other areas that you can get from many other players who might actually have specialities in other stats that help you more. So he is, yeah, totally okay, or yeah, marginally below average, but there's just no upside with Barnes, and he's just not a very good fantasy player, and we're seeing that from him at the moment really starting to play out. Let's get into these games now and talk about the action that did go down on Sunday across the NBA landscape. The first game, the early one, the Toronto Raptors, they spanked the Knicks as they were expected to do. And when the Raptors spank teams, their starters get rests and their bench guys get in. So we only had 28 minutes for Kyle Lowry, only 22 for Jonas Valanciunas, and only 28 for DeMar DeRozan. DeRozan was actually pretty close to dud of the night given how poor his shooting was. Lowry and Valanciunas both played well, but in what is a theme for many games at this point of the year, you know, blowouts really do suppress the minutes of a lot of these players. Van Vliet was strong. Delon Wright returned. He had 12, 2, and 4 in his 20 minutes, while CJ Miles hit his three triples, and occasionally that can happen, but he is far from a reliable option. Norm Powell started with the Jedi OG Anunoby out.
Hello there.
7 points in 22 minutes. He's just not worthy of a roster spot outside of like 18 team leagues. And then when Anunoby's back, I'm not even certain the Powell remains in the rotation. For the Knicks, Courtney Lee returned from his personal issues, but Frank Ntilikina remained as the starting shooting guard. He played 32 minutes and had 11, 2, and 2. So it's good to see the minutes are still there and the fact they kept him starting. I don't like them starting him at shooting guard, but the fact that the minutes are up is a good sign for Frank. I wouldn't be grabbing him in 12-team leagues. He's more a 14 to 16-team league guy. Manny Mudiay, two strong games in a row, 13, 3, and 5 with two steals. You need a point guard. Maybe you take a flyer on him. At this point, with Trey Burke battling wrist issues, Mudiay seems like a stronger option there. Burke only played 15. Lance Thomas was out, so Mick Beasley went back to the starting lineup and had 10 and 11, and that's okay. But it's nothing overly exciting. While Enes Kanter was out with a back issue and the Knicks didn't go to Kyler Quinn, they started Luke Kornet, who played 34 minutes and had 18 and 4 with three triples and a block. There's nothing for us to indicate to us that Kanter's injury is anything long-term, but he could very easily miss a game or two more. And Kornet can contribute. He can block shots, he can hit threes, he can score. I wouldn't be rushing to grab Luke Kornet off a 12-team wire, but in anything deep, I would just see how that goes. But in the two games prior to this, he played 3 minutes in each of those games, so not like a regular part of the rotation. Or Timmy Hardaway, the only player getting big minutes on this team, 38 minutes for Hardaway, 25, 4, and 2. Let's go on to the next game, the Golden State Warriors and the Minnesota Timberwolves. It's a huge win for the Wolves in this game. They looked like they were in trouble. They had a big lead. The Warriors pegged them back, and they get away with a victory in this one without Steph Curry, Andre Iguodala, or David West for Golden State. Kevin Durant put up big numbers, 39 and 12, 5 triples and 3 blocks, but the shooting percentage, which is not something that's normally a big issue for Durant, was terrible, 34%, 32 shots, and that sort of volume could have really lost someone that category for the week. Draymond had 10, 8, and 7, 3 steals and a block, and that's as prototypical a line as you'll get from Draymond. We already talked about Zaza. While Klay Thompson was dealing with a thumb issue, he played 40 minutes and had 21 points. Quinn Cook started, did very little, 4 and 4 in 29 minutes, while Livingston had 8 and 4 in 21. Those guys are going to take the Steph Curry minutes, but they're not worthwhile adding in 12 or probably even 14-team leagues. Uncle P also got some extra minutes. He went scoreless in his 22 minutes. And if Nick Young's not scoring, he is not doing anything else for you. On to the Timberwolves. Derrick Rose made his Timberwolves debut. He played 7 minutes. He scored 2 points. He had 2 assists. He was 1 of 5 and he was minus 17 in 7 minutes. I understand that he hasn't played for a while through his own choice, of course, you know, taking time off for the birth of his child. But yeah, that was poor. I don't think he's a very good player anymore, and I thought he could be a real issue in terms of how they're going to fit him into the rotation. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with his minutes. Does he stay at this 6-7 minute mark? Do they start really phasing Tyus Jones out, which I believe would be a mistake? Not that Jones was fantastic in this game, but he was better than Rose. Townsend was great. Give this man the ball and let him score. Simple. 31 and 16 in 39 minutes. Well, Nemanja Bjelica, third consecutive game of over 40 minutes. And Tibbs just wants anyone who plays on the wing to blow their knee out. 10-7-4, 3 steals and 2 blocks. The defensive numbers are a real shock from Bielitsa. The 4 assists are pretty shocking as well, to be honest. I wouldn't be banking on all these steals and blocks coming from Nemanja, but he is putting up some really, really good numbers, and the minutes are obviously helping, and he is a 12-team guy. Wigo had 23-5-3, while Jeff Teague only took 8 shots.
My name is Jeff.
Scored 10 points, but added the 10 assists and 2 steals and deferred more to Karl Anthony Towns, which is basically what he should be doing. The Chicago Bulls and the Atlanta Hawks. Man, this Bulls team, Jesus. The rule is for this resting policy is that you shouldn't be sitting healthy starters in road games. And that's what the Bulls were doing with Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday. And the Bulls, you know, the NBA gave the Bulls a message, hey, stop it. And they went, all right, cool. We'll start Justin Holiday again. We'll bring Robin Lopez back in. But then, in a road game, they decide to just go, well, no, we don't care about the tanking resting rules anymore, so we're not going to play Justin Holiday. So trying to get a handle on what they're going to do with their rotation is pretty bloody impossible. This is still a farce. You know, Robin Lopez started. He played 12 minutes, and that's it. The only purpose this is that it takes away the ability of Chris Felizio to be a deeper league guy. It takes the top off of some of Bob Portis's playing time. It, you know, caps what David Nwaba can do. Although, without Holiday there, Nwaba still only played 23 minutes, and it's hard to own him in a 12-team format. Punchbob Shiploke had 21-10-5 in 27 minutes. It doesn't look like he's going to be playing big minutes anytime soon, but in 27, he can provide value. But just a couple of games ago, he had struggled to get anywhere near this level of value. So don't be thinking this is what's going to happen more and more. Larry Markkanen had 19-8, while Denzel the Hammer Valentine had 12-6-7. You know I like the Hammer. I wish they would play him over Nwaba, just because I think that there's more that he can offer for this team. But you know, Nwaba's been very good. I just want to see more out of Valentine. This was strong. He's a borderline 12-team league guy. My boy Cam Payne, man, he's doing it again. 17 minutes for Payne, 7-2-4, 2 steals, 67% shooting. The assists, the steals, he's hitting threes. These are actually valuable contributions for fantasy leagues. 18-team league, 20-team league, maybe 16-team league. Payne has to be on your radar, at least in those deeper leagues. And you would not believe this if I told you that over the last week, and it's an extraordinarily small sample size, Cameron Payne's the 78th ranked player in that time. Now, he's shooting 58%, which of course won't continue, but 2 steals a game, 2.3 assists, almost 2 threes, and over 10 points per game. That is the Cameron Payne that I envisaged when he came into the draft. I really liked what I could see, but he's obviously struggled. He is a top 150 player for this season, which is staggering. It has to be staggering to anybody who looks at that and goes, shit, man, he gets steals. The assists are nice, and he's hitting threes. On a low-volume day in a 14- or 16-team league, you might want to look at streaming Payne in, because he has been impressive. I believe he has, anyway. LaVine, 21 points. At least he didn't shoot horribly, 44%, 3 assists and a block. I don't believe in this guy as a star. We've heard me say that a few times about him. Well, Chrissy Dunn had 13-2-5 with 3 steals. Shot poorly as well from the field and from the line, but not a bad performance from him. Antonio Blakeney, he got some extended minutes. 19 minutes, 14 points with 2 triples. This guy scores. He knows how to score. He's been tearing up the G League like that. With Holiday out, he got an extra opportunity. When Justin returns, will Blakeney remain in the rotation? And if so, who will it be over? I don't think he really sniffs 12-team or 14-team league value, but in 20-teamers, have a look, because he can score some points for you. For the Hawks, the Undertaker, Dwayne Dedmon, 10-9, a triple one. Good percentages. That's absolutely what you want at this time of the year. You know, steady sort of production. Well, the Baptist was good as well. 15-7 for John Collins with a block. Both those guys are 12-team league players. While Mike Muscala making a charge, he had 19 points, sure, on 7-9 shooting, which is not something that's likely to continue. Hit 5 triples and had a block. And that's what he can do. He can block shots. He can hit threes, and he's getting minutes consistently in the 20s, which is a mid-sized league sort of performance. There was no Dennis Schroeder, there was no DeAndre Bembry, there was no Malcolm Delaney, so ball handlers were at a premium for this team. They also lost Kent Bazemore and Jalen Morris during this game. It looks like Morris is going to miss some time. We're not sure about Bazemore. But with that happening, it meant Isaiah Taylor, who had 8 assists in a start, got some minutes, and we had Tyler Dorsey get an increase in his playing time, but neither of those guys are really getting close to the standard league area that you want them to get to. Well, Josh Maget played 22 minutes and had 8 assists of his own, and in a deeper league, you know, seeing that situation, Maget could have been a streaming option for assists. the Utah Jazz and the New Orleans Pelicans. Rubio, Gobert, the Don, Jingling Joe, all four of those guys were fantastic. Ravishing was awesome. 30, 10, and 7 with four triples, while Gobert had 19 and 16 with two blocks, and the Don had 27, 3, and 5, and Ingles had 20, 3, and 5. Clearly, all four of those guys are must-own guys. The only one who might be on the wire is Ingles, and he needs to be owned. Derek Favors, only 19 minutes, as Jay Crowder has played over 30 minutes in the last two games. If you are in a 10-team league, I don't think you need to be owning Favors, and I would almost... That's not true, because I preach need. I was going to say I would have Ingles over Favors every time out, but it depends on what sort of stats I need. But in general, I think Ingles is a guy who should have higher ownership than what Favors does. If you are in a 10 or 12-team league, I think you can move on from Favors. He's just, his upside is really, really capped playing alongside Rudy Gobert. As for Crowder, great game in the last one. Just a real turd burger in this one. 1 of 11 from the field for 5 points. Had a block, that was nice. The taking the shots wasn't the problem, it was just hitting them. And this is going back to his problems all through his time in Cleveland as well. He's more of a streamer or 14-team league guy. For the Pelicans, another low-minute game for Rajon Rondo. 4 points in 23 minutes, had 8 assists. And with Solomon Hill returning maybe at some point this week, I think you're going to see more cases of Rondo playing 22, 23 minutes than playing 30 minutes. He does put up some numbers against some bad teams, so that'll be something to watch. And if you need what he provides, assists and some steals, he's going to have some value. But that's 2 games in a row of under 25 minutes for Rondo, and they close games without him quite often. Jrue Holiday had 18, 6, and 10 with 2 steals. Nice numbers from him, while Emeka Okafor had 11 and 6 with a block. Now, as for Nick Mirotic, only 18 minutes for him, 2 of 9 shooting. And when Okafor and Davis are healthy, we have seen a trend of Mirotic's minutes going from 32, 33 down to mid-20s, and now we're going under 20. Do or die sort of time. You need to get streaming in. You need to get players in that fit what you need. I don't think you should be considering Mirotic as an absolute must-own guy that you can't part ways with. The evidence at the moment is pointing towards that he won't be getting closer to 30 or 35. He'll be pushing to 25 or 26 or even lower, and that could really impact what his value is as we move forward. Sacramento Kings and the Denver Nuggets, another spanking. Dave Yeager played all his veterans in this one because the young players were struggling. They were running into a wall. So, of course, we had to make sure we got big minutes from the veterans in it. Well, actually, that's not true. They weren't all that big. Budrick Hield had 18, 5, and 4. That's a strong performance from him. He should be owned. Well, Costa Kufos had a double-double in 20 minutes. He started even though Willie Cauley-Stein was back, but Cauley-Stein managed his 30 minutes, so nothing to really panic about too much there. If someone dropped Will, I'd be all about adding him. De'Aaron Fox also returned, had 12, 3, and 9, so that limited Garrett Temple and Frankie Mason's minutes. Both those guys dropped back under 20, while Bogdan Bogdanovic struggled with his shot, 2 of 10 from the field, only 6 points. But as I highlighted earlier, the schedule for the Kings does make it worthwhile keeping him around, but his performance has dipped considerably over the past couple of weeks. Zach Randolph started 12 and 5 in 22 minutes. We don't know if he's going to play. If he's going to rest, we don't know if this young player's running into problems with fatigue is going to be something that persists. So it's really tough to consider him anything more than a streamer. Onto the Nuggets, Nikola Jokic had a triple-double in under 20 minutes for the second time this year. He ended with 20, 11, and 10 with 2 steals and 4 triples, and that's 3 massive games in a row alongside Paul Millsap. So thankfully, that issue looks like it solved itself. Well, the Blue Arrow also on a roll, 23 and 5. Of course, the opponent is a big factor in these big games. Gaz Harris.
Nice, Gary!
21 points on 16 shots, really efficient. Didn't do too much else, but a strong game. Well, Wilson Chandler, old baby neck. He was back. He started, had 16 and 6, but he is more of a 14-team league player. Well, Will Barton, 9, 6, and 4 in 24 minutes, but the minutes are low because of the nature of this game, so don't go dropping Barton based on this performance. Same with Millsap, who only played 24 minutes and had 6, 9, and 4. The Houston Rockets and the Dallas Mavericks, no Jim Harden. He will play on Monday, though, so Eric Gordon got the start, and when Harden sits or when Paul sits, Gordon goes off. He did it again, 26 points with 6 triples, 2 assists, and a steal, but will likely go back and see his production dip in the next game when Jim's back. Chrissy Paul was also good, 24, 5, and 12 with 4 triples, while there was still no Ryan Anderson. So PJ Tucker got another start, but this game was, you know, well and truly in control by Houston. So, you know, minutes were able to be reduced. We saw, you know, only 30 from Chris Paul, 31 from Gordon. PJ Tucker played 20, Clint Capela only 23. It was a shit night from Trevor Ariza, 1 of 10 from the field, only 3 points. He's been a bit up and down since returning in terms of his overall production from that hamstring injury. I still think he's probably a 12-team league guy, but in a 10-teamer, I don't think you should be considering him, you know, hands-off type property. For the Mavericks, Dennis Smith returned. He started, had 4 points on 12 shots, just obliterating your field goal percentage, 4 assists and a steal. If you aren't punting field goals or you think it's going to be a tough matchup, then maybe, you know, playing him or activating him is not going to be your best case scenario this week. Dwight Powell only played 23 minutes but had 20 points with 5 rebounds. The efficiency, the defensive numbers, they're really key with Powell, and it doesn't look like his minutes are really going anywhere. He's probably not going to be a 29-minute guy, but in mid-20s minutes, he can definitely produce value. Nerlens Noel would also be a guy who produced great value in mid-20s minutes. He only played 15 here, but 10 and 9 with a steal. This is the stuff that he used to do in Philadelphia. One of the best fantasy per minute guys that is out there. He just needs that playing time. Yeah, taking a flyer on a guy like now, hoping that something develops in the next couple of weeks, is probably not the best idea. But if you need rebounds, if you need steals, you need blocks, then Noel's one of those guys who's going to provide that for you. There was no Wes Matthews, and he is going to be out for the remainder of the week. He can be dropped in 12-team leagues and probably 14-teamers as well. Yogi Ferrell started but did very little. I wouldn't be scurrying to go and add him with Matthews out. But if you need assist, JJ Barea is going to be a good option. 13 dimes for him, only 4 points and shot poorly, but he's going to rack up those assists and provide value there. McDirt did very little. While we had minutes for Kyle Collinsworth, Jameel Warney, and John Motley, all in the same game. So tank season is on. The Indiana Pacers and the Boston Celtics, big win for Indiana as they strive for home court advantage. Oladipo, 27-3-4 with 3 steals, a really full line and very efficient from him. While Miles Turner, this is the Miles Turner that we hoped we'd get at the start of the season. 19-10, 3 threes, a steal and 3 blocks. This is what we said, you know, second round player, this is what he can be. But it's just been so inconsistent this year. Dealing with a few injuries hasn't helped. Bojan Bogdanović had 14-3-3 with 4 triples. When he plays with Darren Collison, his free throw rate drops almost in half, and that's been a key part of his elevation over the previous couple of weeks. So just keep an eye on that. Only had 2 attempts in this game. As for Dazza, he had 2 points, but had 10 assists, and he will likely start the Pacers next game, while Corey Joseph had 8-6-3. And still, his value probably remains what it is, 14-16 team league sort of guy. Thaddeus Young, I think you can get rid of him in standard leagues. The appearance of Trevor Booker, the return of Glenn Robinson III, the little dog, it's impacting what Young can do, and he is a guy that can provide steals, but if you don't need that, then he's not doing really anything else for you. On to the Celtics. No Jaylen Brown, out for concussion for this week. Al Horford was sick, and then Kyrie Irving had knee soreness that saw him not return over after halftime. Now, Irving said he's probably going to need to rest this knee to get it right, so I would doubt that he plays on Wednesday, and he probably doesn't play Friday either. So expect at least the next 2 games out for Kyrie, maybe even the following Sunday. So it's a really bad time for this to happen, obviously. But with Jaylen out, with Kyrie out, then Marcus Smart and Terry Rozier get huge, huge bumps. Smart was ridiculous. You know I really like Smart as a player. He had 20 points with 7 rebounds, 8 assists, 4 steals, and hit 6 triples. The points and the threes, let's forget about that, because him shooting 50% from threes is an anomaly. But rebounding, getting assists, getting steals, this is what he does. If you can stomach the poor field goal percentage, and you'll notice, I say that sentence all the time, and it's why when I head into so many drafts, I just punt field goal percentage, because there are so many players whose value gets dropped 50, 40 spots based on field goal percentage alone. And if you ignore that, you get all the other goodies that they bring. And Marcus Smart is one of those guys. As for Rozier, he had 16-6 with 3 triples. Another guy that's going to have value for this week and probably should be owned. With Jaylen Brown out, Jason Tatum's minutes went up. I think it also helps that Marcus Morris had to play at the 4 more with Al Horford out. 19 points for Tatum, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 triples, 1 steal, 2 blocks. An absolutely fantastic line. This is November Jason Tatum. This is December Jason Tatum. Hit his threes at 50% as well. Hopefully he can stick back at this level. I don't have full faith that he will, and if he was dropped, rightfully so, because he had struggled for a couple of months, but the injuries here could really start to kickstart his numbers back up, so keep an eye there. With no Horford, Aaron Baines played some extra minutes. Daniel Tice played 19 minutes, but he also copped a bang in the knee, so we're going to check on his status. And if we're going to have no Horford or no Tice on Wednesday, although I imagine Horford, he won't be sick still on Wednesday, then Greg Munro will be someone you can look at.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
He only had 8-4, but blocked 2 shots in 17 minutes. And if he's forced into a 26 or 27 minute role, then you know he's going to be useful. But it seems unlikely that Horford will be out that long. Marcus Morris had 10 in 32 minutes and not really a 12-team league guy, in my opinion. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Brooklyn Nets, another spanking. So minutes were well down. No Sixers player played over 30 minutes in this one. Bob Cove, he is back. 19-5, 3 triples, a steal and 2 blocks, exactly what you want from him. Sharvich was great as well, 18-6 with a steal and 2 blocks. While Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid weren't fantastic, but were okay. 11-6-6 for Benny, while Embiid had 21-8-3 and a triple one. The free throw percentage let him down. Also, it was good to see a double-double from Ersan Ilyasova, but we're talking about him as a deeper league guy. Rashawn Holmes also replaced Amir Johnson in the rotation. We've seen Brett Brown do this a couple of times to keep Holmes active. It won't happen every game, and Johnson will still be the backup center for the majority of games for this team. On to the Nets. D'Angelo Russell was good. 26-4-4, but his pattern has been play good and then play shit. So maybe you expect a bad one from him in the next game. He still needs to be owned. Caris LeVert, 27 minutes, 10-2-5. That's, again, really solid production. His minutes is capped just because of Dinwiddie and Russell. But if Russell struggles, Kenny Atkinson's shown no problem in reducing his playing time so Caris can get out there. So if you want him and he fits what you need and he fits your team's schedule, then he's fine. Hollis Jefferson and LeVert look like they're going to remain on the bench. 23 minutes for Rondé, 12-6 with a block. You know, he definitely has that value, while Dinwiddie had 13-3-6 in 29 minutes. The Blue Swimmer cooled off. I would look at him as a three-point specialist and streamer only. Alan Crabb, of course. Well, Jarrett Allen, who I do like a lot, he played 16 minutes. The return of Rondé Hollis Jefferson has really impacted Allen's minutes. It's pushed Dante Cunningham more across to the five also. So I think that if you are looking for big man production, yeah, Allen might stick around, but probably not. And he should definitely be considered on your chopping block. It was also a terrible night from Damari Carroll, who was 1 of 9 from the field, but he had been really good leading up to this game. The last game of the night, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Los Angeles Lakers. Just an absolute spanking from the Lakers onto the Cavs. A terrible loss from Cleveland. LeBron was still pretty good.
LeBron James.
24-10-7 with 2 triples, but very little production from other guys. But I was encouraged by what I saw from Ante Zizic. 20 minutes, 15-7 with 2 blocks. This is why I was so excited about this guy into the draft. I looked at his numbers and shit, these numbers translate really good. He has got top 100, top 80, yeah, fantasy upside at some point. Obviously, ending in Cleveland and Boston, they weren't great for his overall value, but he's definitely a name to watch, especially while Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love are out. This is 2 strong games. He had a batter on the middle, but 2 really strong games from Zizic and showing he can stick at this level. Kyle Korver hit 4 triples, and he is, you know, excellent as a 3-point streamer. Larry Nance was good again with 16-8. Well, George Hill struggled. The plumber J.R. Smith struggled, and Jeff Green struggled. Yeah, Hill, I think, is really borderline, and I'd be more looking to use that spot as a streaming spot at this point with playoffs right around the corner. Jose Calderon, 14 points in 21 minutes. Don't expect too much there. Well, Jordan Clarkson, not a 12-team league guy. 4 points in 16 minutes. Hashtag revenge game. Onto the Lakers, Julius Randle. He has been unbelievable this season. Started off poorly, moped, complained a little bit, but has been just balls to the wall as much as anyone in the, well, not even second half of the season, probably, you know, the back 2/3 of the year. 36-14-7, a steal and 2 blocks. He looks tremendous. Brook Lopez's minutes are also on the rise. 22-8-4, a steal and 2 blocks. If he is on your wire, go and add him. I didn't think that they would start giving Lopez big minutes down the stretch, but it's happened. His minutes have gone from 18, 20 to 30 a game, which is a weird change. KCP had 20 as well, as did Isaiah Thomas. So 4 Lakers players, 20 points of scoring. It helps when your matchup is against the Cavs and their defense is horrendous. Brandon Ingram is out for at least the next 2 games, so the future MVP Kyle Kuzma will get at least 2 more starts at small forward. He had a 14-10 double-double, while Lonzo Ball, it was a bad night shooting from him. 2-11, but still added 7 assists, had a steal, and hit a triple as well as the Lakers get the big, big victory over the Cavs. And it was pretty amazing to watch how well they actually played in this game. All right, let's go player spotlighting now, and we're heading to the Orlando Magic to look at a player that you know I was really high on heading into this season, the number 6th pick in the NBA draft, Jonathan Isaac. His season has been derailed by injuries. He has played just 21 games this year. But we are getting an opportunity now with Evan Fournier out, pushing John Simmons across to the 2, Terrence Ross out as well. You're getting Mario Hezonja playing at the 3, and Aaron Gordon out with a concussion is allowing Isaac to see his minutes rise. They bumped his minutes restriction up. He played 26 and 25 minutes across those 2 starts that he had. And what he has been is an excellent source of defensive stats. He has had at least 2 steals in 4 consecutive games. In fact, he has had 2 steals in 5 of the 6 games since he returned from that ankle injury. 2 steals, 0 steals, 2-2-2-4. He's also blocked shots in 5 of those 6 games. 1 block, 3 blocks, 2 blocks, 1 block, and 1 block. Getting those defensive numbers is really, really valuable. Now, he's doing very little else. In the 6 games since he's returned, he's averaging 3 points, and he's shooting 29% from the field. But 2 steals and 1.3 blocks, that's the sort of value that a guy like Nerlens Noel has. I think that Isaac can be a better offensive player than Noel. He can be a really good rebounder as well. He can be I think peak Isaac is a 15 and 10, 2 steals, 2 blocks, 1.5 triple sort of a guy, which is probably pushing top 50 in fantasy value. It's been a tough road for him, but this is why I really like him for fantasy, is getting these defensive numbers. And we're seeing that in all these games. Now, he's not going to continue getting 2 steals per game for the rest of the season. I don't think so anyway, but he is a guy that, as a rookie, to have a really large defensive box score plus minus, it's only 400 minutes, so it's a limited sample size, but have a 2.9 in that category is really impressive. The team is only 1.5 points better off with him on the bench, which is still a negative, but it's not terrible for a rookie who's played as few minutes as he has. It's good to see these advanced numbers working in his favor, and he's true shooting shithouse. He's at under 45%, but players like this, we could easily see him take a true shooting step forward of 8, 9, 10% next season. And the defense, if that stays that level and probably gets better, then we're talking about a lot of value. In his time at Florida, he only played 26 minutes a night, but he averaged 12 and 8 with 1.2 steals and 1.5 blocks and shot 35% from 3 and 51% from the field overall. So he does have the ability to knock down some shots. He's a strong rebounder, and the defense has clearly translated and will only get better. I think that he does have a higher upside, fantasy-wise especially, than a guy like Josh Jackson. I think he can be better than him. I think he can be... I think that his upside is actually higher fantasy-wise because of the defensive number, higher than Jason Tatum's. We will see how that all pans out. But I really do like him. Yeah, that's the Tatum one's an interesting one. I thought Isaac would be a better option than Tatum heading into the season. Tatum's obviously outperformed all expectations, but has dropped off recently, and Isaac hasn't really had that opportunity. But I think that he's, despite what he's showing now, not everyone will be necessarily switched on to what his upside can be. They might go, real defensive specialist. I think he can be more than that. So I'd be seeing what it takes to get him in a dynasty type format. Because I do think there are some really key or some big improvements that will come for him next season. I don't know what they do with Aaron Gordon, but if you see them not decide to bring Gordon back, which would be a surprise to me, but if they do that, that is an insane show of faith in Isaac, a guy that can play the 3, the 4, and the 5, and I'd like to see that 4-5 Gordon-Isaac combination be tried out a little bit more. That would help John's field goal percentage. Also seems like a really top-notch ripper bloke as well, which, I'm big on the good bloke scales. I like what Isaac is doing. He's putting up some numbers in this small little cameo. Let's hope that pushes forward, but he is definitely a name to watch, and I'm going to be really interested. Now, in terms of value for seasonal leagues this year, if you need defense, add him. He's going to provide those numbers for you. He's going to be in at least a 20-minute role per night as we move forward, probably even more with the Fournier injuries and no rush to bring Gordon back, even though Gordon will return at some point. I don't know when it will be. Isaac is going to continue to get minutes, and I think he'll continue to impress. A really strong stuff we've seen from him in the limited minutes that he's played, and he does have scope to get considerably better as he learns more and gets those shots to drop. Let's talk DFS. It is a small Monday slate that we're going to be looking at. Only four games. Really not used to seeing a day that small on a Monday or a slate that small on a Monday. Not doing a perfect lineup today because there was weird slates all over the place. There was no all-day slate. There was earlies. There was lates. There was one-game slates. So no point going through it because it really doesn't encapsulate the entire day of DFS. The first game of the night, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Memphis Grizzlies. The Bucks are favored by 7. The total is 207 points. The Grizzlies rested Marc Gasol last game. He will be back in this one. Tyreke Evans is out along with Andy Harrison and Mario Chalmers, while Jarrell Martin is listed as questionable. Matty Dellavedova has also suffered a setback for the Bucks, so he won't be playing in this one either. If Jarrell Martin is out, it obviously boosts the value for Jermichael Green, who has shown over the last two games that, you know, some of those earlier performances were a touch on the fluky side. Point guards in this one, Eric Bledsoe is at 7,500. Again, on a limited slate, Bledsoe, while he doesn't go, yeah, look, this is awesome value, he's going to be dropping 40, he's got the opportunity to as one of the best point guards on the slate who doesn't cost a shitload like Russell Westbrook. He is an opportunity to use here. Kobe Simmons is not really going to be slowing him down necessarily. So I think he's a solid play without being the best on the board. Whereas Xavier Ratan-Mays as the backup point guard, he struggled his last time out, only 2 points. He's at 3,600. I think you can find better options, but he is an interesting GPP guy just with the limited options available. At shooting guard, I like Kobe Simmons. He's at $4,000. He did struggle in that last game, only 17 points in 36 minutes, but he's likely going to be starting again at point guard. Now, Eric Bledsoe's defense can be a problem, but I think just to try and get that value, enabling you to get some other high-priced guys in Lillard, Harden, you know, Westbrook, these sort of players, getting a guy like Simmons in, you know, fingers crossed you're getting 22 or 23 out of him, then there's that really does work out. Chrissy Middleton's at $7,000. He's just a solid 30 to 35 point guy, which is absolutely fine. You want 35 plus, but again, a limited slate, low scoring likely to me. I think Middleton is fine. Well, Sterlo Brown at 3,800. Had that big game the other day. I just don't really put too much faith in it. Benny McLemore been really playing well, which is a sentence I didn't think I'd say. $5,000 for Ben. He's getting his shots up. He's a big rebounding guard. He's getting some assists, playing a little bit of point guard as well. So at $5,000, I think he's fine. I think he is a cash valuable player. Tone Snell is the opposite of that. At small forward, Yanni's at 11,900. Another one of those high price guys. I think you almost lock him in at 50 here again, which is really helpful when you get a guy like Kobe Simmons in to enable you to have these high profile or high priced guys. I think there are other guys you'd probably prefer to Yanni in the high price bracket, maybe like Harden returning against the Spurs or Russell Westbrook, but Adetokunbo is clearly an option. Dylan Brooks is also playing well, much like Ben McLemore at 5,200. He is a cash worthy option with a little bit of GPP upside also. At power forward, Jermichael Green at 6,200. He's exceeded that value quite a few times, but it comes on the back of fluky assists and block numbers. And if Jarrell Martin plays, I couldn't see myself getting behind Green. But if Martin is out, I think he would be okay to use, even in cash, as much as I don't think he is that good of a player. Well, Jabari Parker at 53, does he get some extended run? There is a possibility, so I like him as a tournament guy, but nothing more than that. The Muppet, John Henson's at 5,000. A real monster from him in the last game. 34 points in 31 minutes for Henson. Marc Gasol's not a great matchup for him, so I think that that's probably going to be a fade situation. As for Gasol, 7,800. They're not going to win this game anyway, the Grizzlies. Gasol can go out there and play 38, 36, 37 minutes, and it's not going to change the outcome of the game. So Gasol, I think, is totally fine, but there is an element of risk that if they decide, well, we're just going to play him 27. Because if he plays 36, then he smashes 7,800 against this team, against the Bucks. But for Marc Gasol at 7,800, it's a little bit risky to play that in cash. Deontay Davis, probably not interested there. Same with Tyler Zeller. Over on DraftKings, Yanni at 10.8 is really, really strong. Gasol tournaments, again, they're 7.5, I like. And Bledsoe at 6.8, I think, is in a pretty good position of strength there. While Kobe Simmons at 3,900, again, trying to get the right balance in your lineups. I like where Simmons sits at that sort of a price point. Middleton at 6,900 is okay. And 7,100 for Jermichael Green, I think, is too high, especially on DraftKings. Yeah, way out on him as opposed to where he sits on FanDuel. the Sacramento Kings and the Oklahoma City Thunder. We don't know the status of a few players here, Steven Adams and Skel Labissiere in particular. Labissiere missed today's game with that hip issue. If he is out, you're going to get more Kosta Koufos and more Zach Randolph. We don't know if Koufos, Temple, Vince Carter, or Randolph will play. The Kings don't normally give that information out, so they are always tough to pay attention to. As for Adams, he left last game with an ankle injury. I think there's every chance that they sit him out here. You get Dakari Johnson starting and playing 18 minutes or so. And then you get Pat Patterson, Jeremy Grant, perhaps Nick Collison filling in. So without having one real number one option, but whoever they announce as the starter, and these first three games all start at the same time. If it is someone like Dakari Johnson, I'd be okay throwing him into a GPP. If it is someone like Patrick Patterson, I'd also consider that. At point guard, Westbrook, $12,100. It's expensive. It's the Kings. He could have 60 and three quarters, so I think he has to be in play for cash and for tournaments. While De'Aaron Fox, good return to action for Foxy today, 29 points in 30 minutes at $5,700. Repeat that, and you're pretty happy with it. I think he's a good option to use. Frankie Mason and Fat Face Ray Felton, their value is pretty limited. At shooting guard, Budrick's at $5,700. I feel good that Hield is going to get you around 30 and probably higher. So I think he's a strong cash option and tournament guy here. While Bogdan Bogdanovic at $5,800 has really struggled, is averaging just 17 over the past three, which is a poor output from him and only 11 points in today's game. Tournaments, if you go that way, but I probably wouldn't. Corey Brewer. Yes, it's 2018. Yes, he is starting, and yes, he is playing 30 minutes a night. He is at 3,800 and had 22 points in the last one. I feel like he's going to get 26 minutes at least, and at 3,800, I think he can, against the Kings especially, they won't be afraid to throw the ball his way and let him do some stuff, and I think that he can get you 20 points. I like Brewer here. Again, another buffer-type player to get some high-priced guys in your lineup. Paulie George is at $8,800. That's probably just a little bit too high given the blowout risk. While Justin Jackson at $4,200, he just very rarely gets near that value mark that he needs to. Mello's at $5,800 has really struggled, averaging under 22 points across his last five games. Sure, you could look at him as a tournament thing, but this is 60 plus games of him not really getting close to where that value needs to be. So I'll say no for him. Jeremy Grant at $4,000 is absolutely a tournament guy who should get some extra run if Steven Adams happens to sit. Labissiere, Randolph, I'm not interested in any of those guys. As for Patrick Patterson, he had a 29-point game not that long ago. At $3,600, if Adams is out, sure, in a tournament he goes. But he's just not really a high-point-producing sort of a player. As for Adams, $7,200, I would love it in any other situation, but coming in off on an ankle injury, we don't know if he's going to play. And even if he does play, he could be limited. I think it's probably fade territory, but I would include him in a tournament if he's ready to go. While Cauley Stein at $7,200. If Adams plays, it reduces Cauley Stein's upside. If Steve is out, then Willie at $7,200 is not a lock for 30 points, but he should be able to get to that level, which is not bad value for that sort of a price tag. On DraftKings, Westbrook at $11,600 is really good. Hield at $5,100 is super strong, one of the best players of the day. While De'Aaron Fox at $5,400 is also fairly strong, probably more of a tournament lean though. While Corey Brewer at $3,700, the same sort of story as on FanDuel, a really nice cheap guard to slot in there. Paulie George at $8,300 is not bad. While Steve Adams, if he plays and at $6,500, I think that's worth looking at just given how cheap that is and his ability to produce against this team who does allow big men to put up numbers relatively consistently. Let's go on to the next game now. We have got the San Antonio Spurs and the Houston Rockets. No Manu, no Kawhi, and no LaMarcus Aldridge, whereas Jim Harden will be back for the Rockets. So it could get real ugly here. The Spurs, you know, just narrowly clinging on to a playoff spot. We don't know the status of Ryan Anderson. You wouldn't be using him in DFS, nor would you be using the guys who gain the most from his absence, PJ Tucker or Luke Marmute. So very little to really pay too much attention to there DFS-wise. At point guard, Chris Paul's at $8,300. Obviously played very well in today's game without Harden, but with Jim back, he goes more towards being a GPP sort of a guy. DeJounte Murray's at $6,300. You know, Chris Paul defense is a real issue, but someone's going to have to do something for this Spurs team with so many players out. So I like Murray with the ball in his hands as a nice 35-point upside tournament guy. I think he's got that ability here in this matchup, but I wouldn't like it for cash. Pat Mills at 4,200 is always really tournament and not really cash worthy. While Tone Parker at 4,000, could he have one of those throwback games? Sure, but he wouldn't be in my great group of guys that I'm looking at. At shooting guard, Jim Harden, 11-2. That's a pretty cheap price for Jimmy Harden. I am all about that. Let's go with that one. While Dan Green at 43, I think you can do much, much better. Eric Gordon, sensational today, no doubt, but at 5,500 and return of Harden, that does cap what he can do. Not a terrible guy to use, but I think there are better ones out there. At small forward, Rudy Gay at 4,400. No Aldridge, no Manu. There's going to be some extra minutes there. Gay at 4,400. He had 23 minutes last time out. At 4,400, I think he's more of a tournament guy there, but there's something there. While Trevor Ariza at 53 struggled, but most nights you feel pretty good about Ariza getting your 25, and I think this could be another one of those spots. So not a horrible low upside cash guy. While Kyle Anderson at 5,600, the opportunity for him to take on a bigger role without LaMarcus there is definitely here. So I like using Kyle Anderson. At power forward, we've got Davis Bertans, who'll also get an opportunity, but he is a little bit up and down and hit and miss, but this opportunity feels really good. He's averaging 22 over his last five. That's not far off where it needs to be. There is some upside there. The matchup is considered a negative one, but I'm not too bothered by that. I think that Davis can get you 27 or 28 here. Nice tournament sort of guy, and in a pinch, you can use him in cash. At center, Pau Gasol at 6,000. I like Pau here. I think that getting 30 out of him should not be considered crazy at all. 35 to 40 point upside without Aldridge around. While Joffrey Laverne at 36 is an interesting GPP guy, but of course nothing for cash. While Capella at 7,200. I think Clint has averaged 34 across the last three against this Spurs team. The minutes are a concern as to how they play him on a back-to-back, so that would lean me more towards tournaments with Capella. On DraftKings, a bunch of guys I like here for cash. Harden, especially at 10-7. Gasol at 5-7, really good. Capella at 6-4, I could use him in cash at that price. DeJounte at 56, again, someone is going to have to take on some of that scoring mantle. And Trev Ariza at 47, I feel pretty good about him getting to that cash level. While Chris Paul, the price is really appealing, 7,700, but Harden coming back takes a little bit of the value away, but I still think it's a really, really strong tournament option. The last game of the day, it's the Miami Heat, it's the Portland Trailblazers. We need to check on the status of Dwayne Wade's hamstring. He is doubtful, so we don't expect him to play. Justice Winslow had a knee issue, but looks like he's fine to go, while Hassan Whiteside is questionable. His absence in the last game enabled guys like Jim Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, and Bam Adebayo to play much better. So if he is out, you're really looking strong with Olynyk, and you're giving Bam a real closer look as well. At point guard, the iron shoulder, Goran Dragic, 6,500. Give me a 7-game slate, and I want nothing to do with Dragic here. But given the way that this slate has borne itself out, and that this game could remain close, I think that Dragic at that price is worth a look, whereas Lillard at 9.5 is just eviscerating teams at the moment. Yes, the Heat have been a real negative for opposing point guards, but Lillard doesn't really care too much for that at the moment, and you're getting 40 out of him almost every time that he is out there. Shabazz Napier revenge game? Probably not. He's at $4,000. With Mo Harkless back, he's tough to use. CJ McCollum is at 7,300. His lowest score across his last five is 32. That is a fantastic floor. I like McCollum here, more so because of the nature of the slate, but I think he's in a decent enough spot. Whereas the Duke Wayne Ellington at 4,000, strong game from him in the last one, and with Wade out, he's got another opportunity, but you wouldn't want to use Ellington in anything more than a tournament, and even then, it's a little bit risky. I didn't talk about Tyler Johnson, which I probably should have. He's a point guard. He's at 4,900. And with Wade out, he's going to get more responsibility handling the ball. And I think he is actually not a bad cash option. At small forward, Mo Harkless is at 39. I want nothing to do with him. But Justice Winslow at 5,000. I'm all about Justice at the moment. He's playing really, really well. And Wade out helps to solidify his value, I believe. Evan Turner, Josh Richardson at 5,900. Again, Richardson's been pretty good considering Wade hogging all the shots. At 5,900 for Joshy, I think he is a nice GPP guy here. Power forward, the Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He's been shit for a while. 17-point average over his last five. Can't really get behind that. Well, Eddie Davis is putting up big numbers consistently. 4,500 for Davis at 26 points across the last five. I just don't see much real upside in him, and I do worry about the floor. So he's a guy that I'm just not super into for DFS. Well, Kelly Olynyk at 51, Whiteside out. We are all about Olynyk there. Even if Hassan plays, I think there's something there with Olynyk, but I wouldn't want to use it in cash. Well, Jim Johnson, 33 points in 20 minutes was great in the last game, but the 20 minutes is the troubling figure there, and that really just sours me on using him. Bam Adebayo had 15 points in 18 foul-plagued minutes. At minimum salary, if Whiteside is out, you smash the shit out of that, I believe, and you get your big numbers in some other areas, but that's only if Hassan is out. As for Whiteside at 7,300, I actually love Whiteside if he plays. I think in 26 minutes, he can easily get you 40 in this matchup, so I'd be paying attention to that. Well, Zach Collins at minimum salary, I think that Collins is worth a tournament look. He had 20 in his last game. He can go for 25. I think there is some GPP low ownership value in Zach. Yusuf Nurkic at 6,000. I can't trust him with anything at the moment. So in a real negative matchup with his minutes all over the place, I have no interest in Yusuf Nurkic. On DraftKings, Lillard and Dragic, I think, are really strong cash and tournament options, while McCollum and Whiteside, they're more moved towards your GPP type of guys. Justice Winslow probably prices himself out here, and Olynyk the same at 5,600, although if Hassan is out, that 5,600 for Kelly becomes a little bit more palatable. I also really like the 5,300 that Josh Richardson sees placed on him. All right, let's go through these other sites now to wrap up today's podcast. On Yahoo for GPPs, I've got Chris Paul, Marc Gasol, Hassan Whiteside, Pau Gasol, Jabari Parker, Rudy Gay, Tyler Johnson, the Muppet John Henson, Jeremy Grant, and for cash and tournaments, Bertans, Corey Brewer, Pat Mills, Ed Davis, Kobe Simmons, Dylan Brooks, Kelly Olynyk, Justice Winslow, Budrick Hield, Eric Bledsoe, and Russell Westbrook. On Moneyball, tournaments, Chris Paul, Marc Gasol, DeJounte Murray, Jermichael Green, Rudy Gay, Pat Mills, and for both, we've got Bertans, Corey Brewer, Kobe Simmons, Kelly Olynyk, Tyler Johnson, Justice Winslow, Budrick Hield, The Iron Shoulder, Pau Gasol, Clint Capella, Lillard, Harden, Antetokounmpo, and Westbrook. And to wrap it up with draft stars for tournaments, it's McCollum, it's Jabari Parker, Justin Jackson, Mo Harkless, and for both, we're looking at Sterlo Brown, Joffrey Laverne, Corey Brewer, Bertans, Kobe Simmons, Rudy Gay, De'Aaron Fox, Budrick Hield, The Iron Shoulder, Pau Gasol, Bledsoe, Paul George, Lillard, Antetokounmpo, Harden, and Russell Westbrook. Good luck to you if you are in the playoffs. Good luck to you as we head down the stretch of a rotisserie league. Good luck with your DFS lineups. If you are listening to this podcast and you like it, go and leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts along with a review. Thank you to everybody who has done that. The reviews continually keep churning through, so really big thanks to everyone there. You can also find the podcast on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify, and on YouTube. Subscribe on YouTube, give a thumbs up, and leave a comment. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network at Locked On NBA Net on Twitter and on Facebook. And I am Josh Lloyd, the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster. You should follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Jeremy Lin.